Greetings, fellow conspirators. Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Audios, opening with great new music from a great new band, Vintage Trouble. Love these guys. Got to see them with my buddy Luther down at T.T. the Bear's place in Cambridge. They're a four-piece, a quartet, you might say, with the lead singer who was just like James Brown in front of the Sex Pistols or something. It's a soul rock mix. It is awesome. And their album is called The Bomb Shelter Sessions. A lot of people are discovering them because of YouTube and a piece that they did on David Letterman's show, and also because the members of The Who must have seen them, and they themselves specifically asked Vintage Trouble to open up for them on their U.S. tour. So congratulations, Vintage Trouble. The guys are really nice guys. Tiny club where we got to see them. It's a very rare thing for this band that's going to be very, very big. And they're awesome. They're really, really great. So look for Vintage Trouble by their disc. And I hope we can get some folks to check them out live and get them making more money for their great skills. All right, quick introduction. This is an amalgam, a hybrid of a radio program that I got to do the other night, which I think is valuable because it shows how back when the Heller decision was laid out by the Supreme Court, and I got on the radio that day and said, this is a bad thing for individual freedom and the concept of rights itself. Turns out we were right. I got a phone call from Glenn Jacobs right after I said that. He had been listening to the program, and he called in and said, I saw the same thing with the Heller case, and you're going to notice, as you hear arguments about the abridgment of the Second Amendment made by Dianne Feinstein and others, and we have the audio for you in this program, you'll see why we were so downhearted by the Heller decision and why it's so important to pay attention to recognizing that you cannot rely on government to protect your rights. It is an encroacher of rights at the outset. So we give you that, and we give you a separate, complete recording of our conversation with Malcolm, which is really funny, his observations on St. Patrick's Day, on the Dianne Feinstein argument about abridgment of the rights to keep and bear arms, and a lot of other really cool things, including conversations about Charlie's Angels. That one we recorded prior to the show, and I'm going to give it to you in its entirety after we get through some of the major issues. Then we'll hear from the lighthearted and very intelligent one, Malcolm. Here's the rest of Vintage Trouble, and I'll give you some other music from the band that opened for them. They're called Leo Gun. They're from England. They're very good. Be seeing you. We reconvene at Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM. LG Grande here with you. Gardner Goldsmith, and it's good to be back together with you. 603-835-3360 is how you get in touch with us. That's 603-835-3360. You can also Skype me when we are ready, and I have opened up the Skype line. It is Gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R, dot Goldsmith on Skype. And we've got Liberty Conspiracy .com waiting for you. We've got podcasts waiting for you. We've got libertyconspiracy at yahoo.com as well. So hope you'll stick with us in all those ways. You can follow me on Twitter at Gard Goldsmith. Nice to get back together again with you right after Walking Dead ends on AMC. It is getting amazing. The show is fantastic. And now we get to go into some serious stuff. Later in the program, we'll get a little lighthearted look at some of the issues that might be near and dear to some libertarians by being joined by our buddy Malcolm. Malcolm is going to be with us, otherwise known as, well, we won't tell you the pseudonym he's gone under many times on the program, but he has posed as many people as some sort of expert. We won't tell you all about that. He's got to keep incognito. We will tell you, however, that if you go to libertyconspiracy.com right now, you'll see the headline that is a big economic headline on the World Zone. If you're a libertarian, especially if you're in Europe and you're dealing with the EU, we'll talk about that story. Right now, let's get into the main stories, shall we? Let's talk about what is happening in the U.S. Senate for people in the United States right now, and it has to do with, yeah, you got it, Repo Man, guns. Oh, look at this. That's when I reach for my revolver. That's when it all gets thrown away. it's pretty funny. When Mission of Burma came out with That's When I Reach for My Revolver, around those times, there were not that many songs that had been put out into the public, except for maybe School's Out for Summer by Alice Cooper, and maybe only a couple other ones that actually talked violence. It was really strange. It was like, these guys are, they scared a few people with that song. That's When I Reach for My Revolver. Of course, Moby redid that one. It's our gun issue update theme. So let's get to the update on right now where things stand in the U.S. Senate regarding the attempt to further curtail people's ability to be able to defend themselves with firearms, otherwise known as gun control, getting politicians and armed people to stop some other people from being able to carry arms. And those armed people who will be hired to stop the other people from carrying arms will be paid with money that is forcibly taken from the very people they're going to take the guns from or restrict the guns. So here it is. Infowars.com has this one. This one is from March 14th, but we haven't been able to get together. So I'll give you this information. Then we'll get into the EU story. Then we'll talk with Malcolm, and we'll talk a little St. Patrick's Day with Malcolm, too. Here's the latest one. Headline, Washington, D.C. Dateline. Senator Dianne Feinstein's bill outlawing so-called assault weapons was approved today on a party-line vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee. You know, those are the ones who are supposed to deal with what's constitutional and what's not. Yeah. Yeah, and they have people like Dick Durbin on it. Yeah, Dick Durbin. Yeah, right on. He's the guy from Illinois who, he was so interested in making sure that Walgreens, which is one of his big sponsors, didn't have to pay for the uploading of their data for credit cards, that he forced the banks essentially to push their credit card purchase fees onto the people who actually use the cards, and directly, not indirectly, through the Walgreens folks. And that was pretty funny, because then after Bank of America started to apply the fees to the customers using the cards, he excoriated Bank of America, which I don't particularly like Bank of America, but he blamed them for applying the fees. That Dick Durbin. Yeah, okay. So here it is. The draconian bill designating an entire classification of firearms as illegal squeaked by on a 10-8 vote by the Democrat-controlled committee. If enacted, the law will make semi-automatic weapons the government considers military illegal. The legislation proposes to ban so-called high-capacity magazines, a term Second Amendment advocates say is politically loaded. Very true. Republican Ted Cruz, derided by Hearst's San Francisco Chronicle as a Tea Party-backed newcomer, asked Feinstein whether she would, quote, deem it consistent with the Bill of Rights if Congress imposed restrictions on the First Amendment. In response, Feinstein said the American people do not need a bazooka. Yes, and there's more. But it is unlikely that this bill will pass the Senate. But this is the thing. They know a lot will pass the House. It could pass the Senate, but the House probably will not allow this to go forward. But the thing about this bill is the folks who want to expand the purview of government and continue to limit people's rights, they go for their gusto. They go for as much as they can possibly get, because they know that on the Republican side, the people who would typically try to stop government encroaching into business and things like that, and the folks who are the civil libertarians who are in politics nowadays, typically backtrack. They do the compromise thing on rights because they don't understand the definition of the word right. And we'll show you that in a little while with a real hardcore left winger who explicitly states that, well, rights can be attenuated. Just as we have always said, there's a big problem if you look at trying to have the government protect your rights, even under what you think is the constitutional side of things, because the Supreme Court is a branch of the government, and the government will be ruling on whether or not it will protect your rights. So good luck. Bye-bye. Have fun on the cruise. You might get sick. Okay, so with that in mind, knowing that this is probably not going to pass entirely, there will be aspects of this that will pass and that will slowly begin to encroach on people's right to keep and bear arms. This is just the way it's going to work. Let's go to Ted Cruz asking Dianne Feinstein some simple questions, okay?
You mentioned that there's some 100 pages of the bill that specify particular firearms that if this bill were passed, Congress would have deemed prohibited. It seems to me that all of us should begin as our foundational document with the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights provides that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The term, the right of the people, when the framers included it in the Bill of Rights, they used it as a term of art. That same phrase, the right of the people, is found in the First Amendment. The right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition their government for redress of grievances. It's also found in the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. And the question that I would pose to the senior senator from California is, would she deem it consistent with the Bill of Rights for Congress to engage in the same endeavor that we are contemplating doing with the Second Amendment in the context of the First or Fourth Amendment, namely, would she consider it constitutional for Congress to specify that the First Amendment shall apply only to the following books and shall not apply to the books that Congress has deemed outside the protection of the Bill of Rights? Likewise, would she think that the Fourth Amendment's protection against searches and seizures could properly apply only to the following specified individuals and not to the individuals that Congress has deemed outside the protection of the Bill of Rights?
Senator, you have our question?
Now, he sets that up very well. Ted Cruz, good job. He sets that up very well. Where is he from? Texas, I think. And he has spelled it out. It's a very simple question. He gives you, like I said, he gives you the setup. He gives you the parameters for his question. And then he asks, basically, can you, in an analogous way, say that you will restrict people's rights to get access to these books? He should have phrased it that way. To get access to, or people's rights to not be searched without warrants. Can you say, in this instance, you will be able to read books, but in this instance, you won't? And so he asks, but he asks this question fairly well, okay? And he gives a setup. Very good. Very simple. It's a simple syllogism. He goes through it. These are our fundamentals. Here's my question based on those assumptions. Now she answers, and we will hear the difference between a guy who's asking a simple question about, well, are you going to be consistent on the Constitution, or will you be inconsistent? And a woman like Dianne Feinstein, who has gotten so many Republicans, unlike this guy Cruz, to go along with her. Then we'll hear from Dick Durbin from Illinois and his concept on rights, which is actually shared by the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
That's just what I'm gonna do. Jezebella, I'm the one. Jezebella, I'm the one. You're only one. Jezebella, I know I'm the fella to keep you around for your money. Jezebella, I know I'm the fella to spill the milk on your honey. Oh, run for your money. Oh, run for your money. Oh, run for your money. Jezebella, 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 Jezebella.
Rolling along, Liberty Conspiracy Radio, LG Grande here with you. I am Gardner Goldsmith, and we'll open up the Skype line shortly. If you want to go to our website, it's libertyconspiracy.com. Libertyconspiracy@yahoo.com if you want to email me. And you can find us on Facebook as well. There's a Facebook page dedicated to the Liberty Conspiracy. I forgot about that. Our podcast can be found at Podomatic. There's a huge stockpile of them there. And actually, we spend a lot of money to host them over there. And there are a lot of educational pieces in there, timely pieces that talk about current events, where the politicians are wrong, where they squeak around their supposed rules, free market economics, international history, things like that, philosophy, all sorts of things. So I hope you'll find those at Podomatic and at iTunes. And you can follow me at Gard Goldsmith on Twitter. And like I said, shortly I'll open up the Skype line. But right now we're in the middle of looking at what is currently happening in the United States. There's another story that comes out of the EU that I think is a big one. That there's a story about the Federal Reserve and what they're expected to do this week and how that has a bearing on what I just happen to mention, I have to mention to you, I heard some folks like Stephen Moore, and I've met Stephen Moore before, and I respect Stephen Moore up to a certain point. I think he does some pretty good work on financial reporting for the Wall Street Journal. It's very interesting to see what some folks like Stephen Moore think is going to happen for the economy and how he happens to think that there's going to be a real recovery rather than a mirage recovery. But I want to get into all that economic stuff from Europe and the Federal Reserve and our guest Malcolm, who will be joining us in a little while on a pre-recorded conversation that we had. Malcolm will be joining us to talk about gun control, unions, and St. Patrick's Day, plus a little bit of other fun stuff thrown in there I won't tell you about, coming out shortly. Okay, we discussed at the beginning of the program, our first segment was devoted to the Senate gun control, so-called law, that they want to pass. It's a bill that will ban hundreds of kinds of weapons and magazines. And what that means is it will punish people and make them criminals if they own this particular piece of machinery or whatever you might want to call it. The machinery itself does not bring direct harm to anyone. In fact, ownership of it tends to, and the more popular the ownership of it is, the more you see violent crime drop in certain areas. And comparatively speaking, it drops more rapidly than in other areas that don't have it. In fact, it's other areas where they ban these sorts of things, violent crime increases. Look at Australia and England. And there is this thing called the Second Amendment. It is in the Constitution, and it explicitly prohibits any government, not just Congress, any government, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It doesn't say this arm or that arm, any kind of arm. So we go back to Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz in the Senate Judiciary Committee, who is asking Senator Dianne Feinstein a very simple question. If you're going to pick and choose where the Second Amendment applies because you want to eliminate these types of firearms and it doesn't protect people who want to be able to own those, does the First Amendment allow the government to then pick and choose certain people that they will arrest for owning certain types of books? And so let's get back to it, because he asks us a very simple question. It's analogous. They are all amendments. They are all part of the Bill of Rights. They have equal standing. And yet, in fact, the First Amendment only prohibits Congress from making laws about speech. It doesn't prohibit the states. There were speech laws by the states that were on the books until the mid-1800s. And religious laws, by the way. There were religious-sponsored, there were state-sponsored religious schools in Pennsylvania till the mid-1800s. But the Second Amendment is an o'er-sweeping general prohibition against Congress and the states, any locality, anything. It says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Ted Cruz, questions. Dianne Feinstein.
She deem it consistent with the Bill of Rights for Congress to engage in the same endeavor that we are contemplating doing with the Second Amendment in the context of the First or Fourth Amendment. Namely, would she consider it constitutional for Congress to specify that the First Amendment shall apply only to the following books and shall not apply to the books that Congress has deemed outside the protection of the Bill of Rights? Likewise, would she think that the Fourth Amendment's protection against searches and seizures could properly apply only to the following specified individuals and not to the individuals that Congress has deemed outside the protection of the Bill of Rights?
Senator, you have a question?
Let me just make a couple of points in response. One, I'm not a sixth grader. Senator, I've been on this committee for 20 years. I was a mayor for 9 years. I walked in, I saw people shot. I've looked at bodies that have been shot with these weapons. I've seen the bullets that implode. In Sandy Hook, youngsters were dismembered.
Okay, classic tactic, and I am going to interrupt right here. Classic tactic, deflect with the attitude of effrontery, saying, I have been insulted by you. How dare you do this to me, right? Do you know who I am? Do you know my background? Do you know what I know? Not addressing the question, which is a very simple logic-based question. For anybody like that jerk, Dianne Feinstein, who swears an oath to defend and uphold the Constitution, it's very simple. Will you uphold it in one area and not uphold it in another? What's your standard? She's not going to talk about it. She's going to talk about sort of like a teenager who is asked a question about, hey, do you know this band? What do you think of this guitar solo? Oh, yeah, I know everything about music. Let me tell you. Yeah, but you didn't answer my question. What do you think of that guitar solo? Because she doesn't know. She doesn't know. Or if she does know, she knows she's being shown to be a hypocrite.
Look, there are other weapons. I've been up. I'm not a lawyer, but after 20 years, I've been up close and personal to the Constitution. I have great respect for it. This doesn't mean that weapons of war, and the Heller decision clearly points out three exceptions, two of which are pertinent here. And so I mean, it's fine you want to lecture me on the Constitution. I appreciate it. Just know I've been here for a long time. I've passed on a number of bills. I study the Constitution myself. I am reasonably well educated, and I thank you for the lecture. Incidentally, this does not prohibit, you use the word prohibit, it exempts 2,271 weapons.
You see what she does there? First, she doesn't address his question. Then she twists it around to make it seem as if the government is not taking actions that are initiating aggression against those who might want to own those guns. It's as if the government is standing up like some sort of barrier to a wind that's just sweeping in to get rid of the other guns, and it is putting its arms down around all the good guns, all the good weapons. Oh, good government, we're here to protect the guns. This is what I'm doing, Senator Cruz. I hate the way that you depicted me. I'm protecting all these other guns. You see, I've got my hand right here. In the meantime, with her other hand, she's picking the pocket of people to pay cops to go after people who have those other types of guns. I mean, it's just sick. This sort of thing is twisted. This is sociopathic thinking. This is very twisted thinking. And this is the way they think they can squeak by people. I don't understand. Anybody paying attention would see that woman and just start laughing. You're a total crock. It's incredible. We'll continue with this and get into heard mention of the Heller case, because we've mentioned this a lot at Liberty Conspiracy. All right. LG Grande here with you, just emailing back a buddy of mine. I've got a short story that we're editing back and forth. I get it from the editor, and then I send him some things. And we're working on this this one particular aspect of Microsoft Word, which is called track changes. So we had some unclear passages going back and forth, and we were able to get everything worked out, and now we're going to be able to proceed. I'm just so happy. You know, during the commercial break, little things come in, and you're like, wow, this is awesome. And I'm glad you're here. This is awesome, too. 603-835-3360. I got to open up the Skype line, but we're going to be joined in a little while, maybe one segment, maybe two segments from now, by our buddy Malcolm, fellow conspirator, man of many talents, musician, writer, cool guy, and observer of freedom, hardcore libertarian anarchist like I, and it's going to be a pleasure to talk to him. We'll talk to him about all sorts of things, ranging from the subject we're discussing now with Dianne Feinstein and Ted Cruz from a few days ago to things like St. Patrick's Day and his observations on St. Patrick's Day, which are pretty funny things. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. And I hope you'll go to libertyconspiracy.com because freedom is out of vogue nowadays. It's definitely out of fashion. And spread the word about the Liberty Radio Network, too. You probably have heard some of the commercials. Mark Edge's voice is in those. And Mark is such a great guy. Mark and Ian, listen, if you ever wonder what the people are like on the Liberty Radio Network, they're all great. They're really outstanding people. They are good, good people. Some of the best I know. And I'm proud to be able to call these people friends and just delighted that they're part of my life. It's just great. So thank you also to the people who support our website, the members of the cabal. Hopefully we've given you some good things. I'd love to be able to give you more, and maybe we'll be able to do that. People who donate to the Liberty Conspiracy, and they do that by going to the Liberty Conspiracy website and clicking the Support the Conspiracy button. And so anyway, okay, let's get back to this conversation. It was a question and non-answer in the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's the way they say it down on the Metro line. The announcer, Judiciary Square, Judiciary Committee in the Senate. And I have been in the Senate before, and boy, I was really happy to get out. Talk about a stuffy environment. Really, really awful. And it is made even more foul by the rotting cesspool of humanity that Dianne Feinstein is. One of the most corrupt politicians probably, in the past 10 to 20 years, just a terrible, despicable creature. And she was asked a very simple question by Ted Cruz. If you want to selectively allow people to exercise their right to keep and bear arms for certain types of guns, will you selectively allow people to exercise their books? Or how does it work with the Fourth Amendment? Will certain searches be allowable? Now, what's fascinating is, for those of us who understand that the definition of words, the term rights means that they are supposed to be unattenuable, correct? Well, Dianne Feinstein answered him, and she said, oh, don't lecture me, blah, blah, blah. I'm not a sixth grader, blah, blah, blah. Amazingly, Dianne Feinstein, sixth graders can understand the term rights better than you do, because you are corrupt, and you will try to massage and work through the idea that rights can be messed with by some people who want to mess with other people's rights. The people in government who write the laws, who write the statutes, who are the lawmakers, as you have been for over 20 years as a senator and as a mayor in California, Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein mentioned the Heller decision. And I brought that up before the commercial breaks. This is like the Liberty Conspiracy podcast done live. This is, I think, extremely important. The Heller decision had to do with Dick Heller. I've met Dick Heller. Dick Heller was a resident of Washington, D.C. And Dick Heller brought a suit saying that the Washington, D.C. gun ban was unconstitutional and that there was an individual right to keep and bear arms. He won in the Supreme Court. In fact, he told some folks at the Liberty Forum a number of years ago, and me personally, that his friend who represented him as an attorney in the Supreme Court specifically decided they had an agreement that if Dick brought the suit, this man would go to law school and get out of law school so that he could bring that case before the Supreme Court. It's like something from a movie. And it has a good ending to those people who don't look closely. because the court found for him, the plaintiff, saying, yes, it is an individual right. And this will tie us back into Dianne Feinstein and into the Dick Durbin segment we're going to play in just a minute, because I think all of these are important, especially later, for people who want to get this as a podcast so they can use it as something to learn from or something to use as a leaping off point for their own investigation into issues to see whether or not we're correct, whether we're on the ball, whether our research jives with what they find. And then what they can do about it to defend freedom and expand on freedom and expose these hypocrites in Washington, D.C. Now, Ted Cruz, in this instance, is not being hypocritical. He's being consistent on the Constitution, asking her a question. He says, what other rights will you start to attenuate? Right? Are you going to attenuate the First Amendment, free speech? Now, Dianne Feinstein mentions her knowledge of the Heller case. We at the Liberty Conspiracy said, in fact, I said on my radio show live that day when the Supreme Court ruling came down in 2007, I said, or 2008 might have been, I said, this is bad news. I was on the air and I got a call from Glenn Jacobs, our friend Glenn. He called up because he was listening and he said, Guard, you're right. Now, few people noticed it. Glenn noticed it. I noticed it. A few others in the libertarian community noticed it. The Heller decision, which was given by Antonin Scalia, and I've said this before on the show, if you've listened before, I hope you don't mind me bringing it up because some people are new, and I want to make sure this is included in this podcast for this information. The Heller decision was 66 pages long, and that was the majority decision written by Antonin Scalia and his different scribes. Okay, now, in it, he went through a bunch of contemporaneous writings, historical pieces and things like that to prove that people at the time believed it was an individual right. It didn't belong to a so-called National Guard that was created by the government. It was an inherent right of an individual to be able to defend himself or herself with a firearm or any kind of arm, right? The right to keep and bear arms. Doesn't matter whether it's a stick or a bazooka or a slingshot or a knife. Doesn't matter. It's an arm. You get to keep it, right? Okay. I am armed. Okay. Now, I have a lot of the books that to which he referred. I already knew this. Everybody else knew this. And I've mentioned before, he didn't have to spend all that time doing it. It was almost like he was trying to throw down cover for something. Because I'll tell you, when you get to the end of it, you'll see what he did. He says all these things, and I say, you don't need to say all, you know, bring up all these contemporaneous accounts and things like that, because all you have to do is use logic. Groups can't have rights because the term group is just applied to a bunch of people, an assemblage of people voluntarily aggregating, right? They still retain their inherent rights because a group is just a word. They're just people who are near each other or doing similar things or doing something for one particular intent or whatever their agreement might be. That's a group. It's not a groups don't have rights because they are always breaking. You can always break them down to their constituent parts, the individuals in there, the human beings, the flesh and blood people, right? So you just use logic. Of course, groups don't have rights. It's an individual right. Groups are always you can always break them down into the individuals, right? Okay. He doesn't do that. He goes through all this list. Then at the end, he says this, essentially. But of course, even though it's a right, we know that rights can be attenuated. What? So he leaves the door open for certain common sense gun controls. You see? So right there in that decision, Antonin Scalia, a decision that so many conservatives thought was so wonderful, he throws away, he urinates all over the very concept, the definition of the word rights. Because a right is, by definition, something that's untouchable. It's sacrosanct. The term was essentially applied to socially accepted means where one person says, hands off, I won't touch what you've got. I won't touch what you do, and you'll do the same for me. But he says, oh no. You can make exceptions sometimes, and you can force yourself on people. If enough people agree to it, then it's not a right. Now we're going to get into Feinstein and Durbin.
I'm not the type of guy to follow a trend. I'm not the type. type of guy that you could have found. I'm not the angel that you want me to be. I'm not the person you're expecting to say. That doesn't matter, cause I say what I like now. I'm even thinking of you. I won't believe I'm thinking.
Rolling along, Liberty Conspiracy Radio. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Coming up shortly in the program, we'll talk about the Eurozone ordering Cyprus to seize 10% of bank accounts. The Federal Reserve looking like it will continue with its Operation Twist, its low interest rates, its pumping of money into the economy of the United States and destroying the buying power of your dollars. And what that shows us about some commentators like Stephen Moore and others like Larry Kudlow, who think that there's going to be a real recovery on its way. But right now, I want to talk about this Dianne Feinstein thing and start rolling in the figure of Dick Durbin from Illinois, the senator from Illinois. Now, how these people can get in their positions and earn six-figure salaries, I can't even say earn six-figure salaries, steal, vote for themselves six-figure salaries off the backs of other people in buildings that were built off the backs of other people. Otherwise, what would happen? Yeah, you'll go to jail or you'll be attacked like the people in Western Pennsylvania, the whiskey so-called rebels. You could be like Erwin Schiff and be in jail the rest of your life, right? Peter Schiff's father. Peter Schiff's doing great work. So, Dianne Feinstein, in her response to Ted Cruz, talks about the Heller case, which, as we mentioned, was Antonin Scalia's majority decision back in 2008, I think it was. And I think it was 2008. And in it, he stated it was an individual right to keep and bear arms. Oh, wow. Finally, light shines on yonder head in Washington, D.C. They've finally spelled it out. The point has been made. This case has been settled. Case closed. Folks who said it was a group right, you've been shown by people who were appointed by presidents and happen to be the largest number in that group of black-robed oligarchs of the government that also get paid, whether you like it or not, And will tell you whether your rights will be protected. They've decided it's an individual right. But then they say, don't forget, rights can be attenuated, which, of course, anybody with any sort of brain left in his head knows is false, because the term right is supposed to mean something that is off limits. That's why it's called a right. Yeah. But that wasn't the first time that has been done. Regarding the right to free speech, the Supreme Court has said, well, you can't yell fire in a crowd of theater. Right? They do this sort of stuff. Fourth Amendment. Oh, well, yeah, sure, it says that a judge has to issue a warrant, but we'll let the cops do it right on the scene. There you go. There's your right. Right? So they've done this over and over again. But they've never explicitly stated the way Antonin Scalia did that rights can be attenuated. Okay? Now, here's Dianne Feinstein. Going to bring it back just a little bit for you. Here, check her out.
The Heller decision clearly points out three exceptions, two of which are pertinent here. And so I mean, it's fine you want to lecture me on the Constitution. I appreciate it. Just know I've been here for a long time. I've passed on a number of bills. I studied the Constitution myself. I am reasonably well educated, and I for the lecture. Incidentally, this does not prohibit, you use the word prohibit, it exempts 2,271 weapons.
Again, she manipulates.
Isn't that enough?
As if the government
the people
is
in the United
the
States
protecting them.
Mr. Chairman?
Do they need a bazooka? Do they need other high-powered weapons that military people use to kill in close combat? I don't think so. So I come from a different place than you do. I respect your views. I ask you to respect my views.
I ask you to respect my views while I take aggressive action to restrict people's rights. That's the way they always do it. And who's giving the lecture? She is. He asked a simple question.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Durbin, it's not... Mr. Chairman, I can't add anything to that. Yeah. Senator Cruz?
Mr. Chairman, I would ask yet another question of the senior senator of California. I think nobody doubts her sincerity or her passion. And yet, at the same time, I would note that she chose not to answer the question that I asked. Which
is awesome. Oh, man, she's such a clown. Now, let's go to Dick Durbin, all right? Check out Dick Durbin talking about the right to keep and bear arms, okay? Here's Dick Durbin. This was from a month ago.
25% plus are sold in the surrounding towns around the city of Chicago, not in the city. And you look over the last 10 or 12 years of the 50,000 guns confiscated in crimes. Almost one out of 10 crime guns in Chicago came to that city from Mississippi. Mississippi. Why? Because the background checks there, the gun dealers there, are a lot easier than they are in other places. And they end up selling these guns in volume, and they come up the interstate and kill wantonly on the way. Here's the basics. I think we all agree, I hope we all agree, that the Supreme Court decision in Heller said we can have reasonable limitations on a Second Amendment right.
Okay. You hear that? You see? This is why the day the Heller decision came out, I tried to sound alarm bells. This is exactly what Antonin Scalia wanted. You see? Conservatives, Antonin Scalia. You see what he did? He screwed you. He sold you down the river. He screwed you so bad. Are you starting to see what we libertarians were saying years ago? This is exactly what we were talking about. Where were you? You were celebrating that decision. You didn't look deep. You didn't even read the end, the last paragraph. Maybe you were too busy being concerned about people crossing the border. Oh. What's funny is Dick Durbin He doesn't recognize the fact that, see, he thinks that if you have some national ban on weapons, it'll stop these weapons. Didn't stop them in Columbine. Didn't stop alcohol during Prohibition. Hasn't made a dent in the use of drugs or drug addiction since the early 70s when Nixon started the so-called war on drugs, Mr. Durbin. Amazing. The only thing that seems to have taken a hit over the past few decades and has reached fewer people is the understanding of the Constitution of the frigging United States, you a-hole. That's what seems to be on the decline. The understanding of the words of the Constitution. But maybe that would be a good thing, because maybe once we finally can remove so many people's devotion to the Constitution, we will actually get to a realization that really government is just brute force, and that the rules for operation that you swear an oath to uphold, that are supposed to be there to protect rights and stop government from infringing upon those rights, are twisted around by you and by people like Antonin Scalia and by people like Dianne Feinstein and others when it suits your purposes, when you want it to be done. You massive, humongous hypocrites. That is the thing. I could care less whether it's the U.S. Constitution or something else that's in there that they swear an oath to uphold. It's the hypocrisy of these people to get up there so righteously and say, yes, I will support a certain mode of operation, and then completely flout it, completely pull their pants down and moon you and say, ha, 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 ha. It is stunning. It's absolutely beyond compare. If people did things like this, they say, well, I got an agreement with you. You're in business with somebody. Hey, I got this contract. Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much. Hey, what are you doing? I'm ripping it. I'm going to do whatever I want now. But would you ever do business with that person again? No. If Dick Durbin operated a private business and he had certain agreements with people, and then he started to break those agreements, what would happen? He'd be out of frigging business. That's why free markets are better than government. Because when they lie like this, people stay away from them. They can voluntarily pull their money back. But in government, you can't, because a guy like Dick Durbin will hire people with weapons to invade your house and take your stuff and tell your business how to run. They are evil. They stand in the way of human progress and betterment of people's lives. They don't allow individual choice and individuals to defend themselves. We'll return next hour. Malcolm will be with us.
I'm a criminal. I'm a criminal. I'm a criminal, baby. Laughing all the way to the bank now.
To the end of the world.
Bringing it up a notch, Liberty Conspiracy Radio. LG Grande here with you. Oh, yes, indeed. Good to have you along for the ride. Hour number two, it is the Liberty Radio Network, and you can also find us at libertyconspiracy.com because freedom's out of fashion nowadays. We're a very small group of plotters. We're planning and working towards a freer world. We're trying to share the ideas of free market economics, individual sovereignty, and voluntary actions with others. Freedom. Freedom to choose. Freedom to include or to exclude. Freedom to make transactions, not make transactions. Freedom to live without coercion. That's our group, and it's good to have you here. Find our podcast at iTunes under Liberty Conspiracy or under Liberty Conspiracy at Podomatic. And that's our host site. You'll find probably about 200 audios over there. And our latest one is posted. It's part two of our analysis of Rand Paul's filibuster on drones and the Section 4, Article 4 topic. Now, I'm saying that with large capital letters there. I hope it intrigues you and you'll look for it. It's on our embedded player at libertyconspiracy.com. It's also at iTunes and at Podomatic. Now, I mentioned some of the big stories we want to mention for that we want to bring up in this second hour of the program, and we'll be joined by Malcolm shortly. Malcolm, in a pre-recorded conversation, was absolutely hilarious, man. He's a funny guy. He's very talented as well. I have to make sure we get a good website for him going so you can see where he's playing. He does great live music, and he's awesome. He's just a really good guy. Well, now we have the opportunity to tell you about a couple of the breaking stories that I think are important. First off, this one from Reuters. This one is from Cyprus. Dateline Cyprus. Headline, Cyprus works on last-minute deal to soften bank levy. What is this? You'll find this at libertyconspiracy.com. It's also posted at our Facebook page for the Liberty Conspiracy. And it says this, Cyprus was working on a last-minute proposal to soften the impact on smaller savers of a bank deposit levy after a parliamentary vote on the measure central to a ballot was postponed until Monday, a government source said. What's this about? The EU. That's what it's about. The EU is collapsing. They need money. And this is going to happen more and more. We'll tie it into our upcoming story about the Federal Reserve in a moment. In a radical departure from previous aid packages, Eurozone finance ministers want Cyprus savers to forfeit a portion of their deposits in return for a $10 billion euro bailout for the island, which has been financially crippled by its exposure to neighboring Greece. Yeah, it's also been crippled because Cyprus also was doing a lot of dumb things with its banks. But anyway, the decision announced on Saturday morning stunned Cypriots and caused a run on cash points, most of which were depleted within hours. What they mean is automatic tellers. Electronic transfers were stopped. The originally proposed levies on deposits are 9.9% for those exceeding 100,000 euros and 6.7% on anything below that. Almost 10%. I guess they kept it at 9.9 to keep it under what certain religions want people to tithe. I mean, what the heck? Whose frigging money is it? You see, this is the thing. Like we mentioned before, Dianne Feinstein with her thing with, We're not seizing people's weapons. We're not banning weapons. We're protecting weapons. What the hell? What are you talking about? That'd be like saying after you cut somebody's finger off, saying I didn't cut that finger off. I protected all your others. Man. I mean, what? How stupid do you think you can be? So in this case, it's not your money. It's the government's money first, and they'll let you keep some. This is it, because if they can take 10%, they could take as much as they wanted at any time. It just depends on, oh, is it acceptable to this portion of the population, to enough people? Well, again, the right to your property doesn't exist under the government paradigm. It does not. It can't, because the only way government can get money to operate is by taking yours or your kids' money by, borrowing or... borrowing from the Federal Reserve, because they're the only ones who are going to buy U.S. Treasuries. They own 70-some percent of them now, since the past year or so. And now they're doing their great Operation Twist. Well, earlier today or yesterday, I can't remember what it was. It's all a blur. Day, night, what's the difference, Repo Man? The Repo Code, kid. You got to see Repo Man if you haven't seen it, you know? Yeah, you got to see it. Yeah, you got it. Time machines. Oh, man, it's so good. Anyway, I can't believe I used to like those guys. Anyway, I say I'm just quoting Repo Man. This is going to be Repo Radio. That's what it is. Okay, now, Lawrence Kudlow has this radio show. And on it, he had a bunch of different people. Bunch of them for so-called Reagan conservative newspapers, especially on their editorial page, like the Wall Street Journal and things like that, right? Okay, so he's talking with a number of them, and a lot of these so-called free market people, and they're not really free market people because they don't oppose the existence of the Federal Reserve. You don't have a free market if the very currency you're using is controlled by the government or a monopoly granted by the government. Yay! Anyway, don't call it a free market, please. I'd be here all week. Okay, so they're saying, oh, yeah, government's honest, it's going to improve, baby. Government is going to, oh, baby. It's not just, you see, what's going on is the economy is going to get better because the government is going to be, they're cutting spending. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Deficit's going down. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not once do they talk about the trillions of dollars that are coming down the pike, not only with this new medical fascism plan and the expansion of Medicare and Medicaid and all those things, but with Social Security. They can't pay for it. Spock, Social Security is going to be over. What are we going to do? Spock, Vulcan mind meld with those guys. Give them some brains. What are we going to do? So it's not possible, but these guys are saying the economy is going to improve. Why? Because one of them actually said, well, it's possible that the Federal Reserve policy, they might have done it this time. It's possible that Keynesianism, which is the idea of you can get full employment by pumping non-existent, virtually not just pieces of paper that people can use to then make hires, otherwise known as dollars. In this case, the Fed's doing it with digits. Or they're doing it by creating digits and then buying U.S. treasuries, treasury bonds with those. And then the government now has the money that was invented by the Fed. Either way, whether the Treasury invents the money or the Fed invents the money and gives it out to banks at low interest rates, or they give it to the federal government at low interest rates, and then the federal government, or you know, by buying the bonds, and the federal government spends that money. Either way, it's not coming from real productivity, from trade, the division of labor, from value being brought from a transaction, real value as determined by the individual. These are the essences of free markets, the essence of higher living standards, the essence of all economics. The core, the nut, is division of labor, individuals trading with each other because someone can do something more efficiently or better, and you get surpluses. With that surplus comes value for others and lower prices with greater plenty, greater plentitude of things, better living standards, less labor for more stuff, less toil in your life, better living standards, new inventions, extra money left over to be used to finance new inventions, not the government inventing money, handing it out for political reasons to banks, which then spends the money and makes people think that there's a higher demand. And this is exactly where we're going now. We have said this over and over and over again. The fact that I heard this on Lawrence Kudlow's program, and that Stephen Moore and others from the Wall Street Journal were saying, oh, I think we're headed for a pretty good recovery here. We might even see 3% growth in the next quarter. That is a mirage, and watch out. Now, take advantage of it while you can. If you can get a job, if you can get your cash, but if you're in a business, be extremely careful about what you do for your warehouse stocks. Be extremely careful about your hires. And if you're a new hire, don't count on your job being around in a year and a half. Because the money that goes through the banks starts to go through the system, and once it starts to hit the consumers, their prices go way up, they start to pull back. And then everybody's stuck. We'll return, we'll talk about this, we'll hear from Malcolm too. Liberty Conspiracy Radio.
myself, oh, what am I doing here? And what am I doing here? Yeah, I woke up this morning and I thought, what am I doing here? Yeah, what am I doing here? Oh, oh, my brother, he starts raging. I watch him rising, I see him pounding. And he sucked her, and he sucked her, and he sucked her dry. And he bit at me and said goodbye. Up on the 29th floor. Up on the 29th floor. Well, I'll someone rattling the locks. Here's lying there with just my brother. He said, yeah, man, I think it might be the cops. And we sucked her and we sucked her and we sucked her dry. Yeah, we sucked her and we sucked her and we sucked her dry. I was Mickey Mouse. He was a big bad man. So we know when you can tell me no. A newborn child is a hero to fight. Little burning cat looking up at me. I'm running in the elevator, getting in the elevator. 6 4 7 4 8 4 9. Come on, baby, don't go.
It's a very special time here. A very special episode of Liberty Conspiracy. Just like all those great comedies, you know when you get a very special episode, the show is jumping the shark. But in this case, we're going to be awesome because we're jumping the shark with Fonzie himself. Malcolm is on the line. How you doing, my friend?
Hey!
Wait a minute, it wasn't loud enough. I got to turn it up. Okay, do it again.
Hey! Sorry, I love Fonzie, man.
You're an icon. You're banging the jukebox, baby.
He wasn't just banging the jukebox, my friend.
You talk to Mrs. Cunningham. You know why they call him Mrs.
That Winkler was like this little short dude, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you got all the ladies. You got all the girls, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, good to have you here, Malcolm. And, folks, Malcolm has some... So he hasn't been with us for a while, and so now he gives us an opportunity to hear his... See through his libertarian eyes. He had something happen, I think it was today, something happened to him. It's an experience with some fine workers, some of our favorite workers. Tell us what happened today in Manchester, New Hampshire, my friend.
Well, it wasn't just that, but I got to say another thing, too.
Yeah.
You know this about me. I was a bartender for years. I managed a bar.
Oh, yeah.
And St. Patrick's Day really bothers me. Like, if I were Irish, I would be just livid about this holiday, because everybody's Irish today. Really. So everybody, you know, so you're saying that, you know, the Irish are drunken morons, stupid crap.
That's it. Everybody's Irish today. So what does that mean? That means you can go out and figure work on Pythagorean theorem and say, no, we can get trashed. Oh, that's what Irish do? Yeah! Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And the thing is, like, you see everybody out, and there's, I don't know what the heck it is this year, everybody's wearing these friggin', like, felt mustaches or whatever. Everybody's got their green on and their little hats and junk. I'm just going to tell you, as a bartender, if you're going out specifically on St. Patrick's Day because it's St. Patrick's Day, and you're all dressed up in your regalia, I can guarantee you this, the bartender hates you. Hates you. All he's looking at is a drooling cash machine. Yeah. Or she.
Right on. Especially if it's a she.
Oh, my God. I hated St. Patrick's Day when I was a bartender.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of St. Patrick's Day when I see all the sudden converts to the Irish heritage, you know?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Oh, my God. Like, you know, the whole, all of a sudden everybody becomes a John Kerry. You know, because John Kerry is not Irish. Like, Aaron Go Brock. Okay, thanks.
A Pogama song.
Who is? What was the name of Chachi? Joni? Aaron? What's her name?
Aaron Moran.
Hi, I'm John Kerry. The Kerry is Aaron Moran style Irish. You know, ha ha.
What a joke, man. So obviously...
It kills me, too. You look back on that stuff. Like, Aaron Moran was a freaking sex symbol back in the day. It was crazy. And I'm looking at her now, I was like, wow. I really think that was hot.
I got to say, I never did. I was sort of like, no, it's not for me, man. You know? I was more like...
Me neither, because that's not cool.
No, I was more into like the Cheryl Ladd sort of thing going on.
Dude,
you know?
I tell you.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to get a little... Probably a little off color and a little bit rude here. But from a purely pubescent, like, masturbatory standpoint, freaking Charlie's Angel still holds up.
Aaron Spelling knew what he was doing, huh?
I used to do marathons at the bar I ran.
Well, I'm glad you're talking marathons at the bar.
It's like a freaking TJ Hooker and Charlie's Angels marathon. And people would make fun of it.
Yeah.
But it'd be like 6:45, you know, and Hooker'd be just getting over, and somebody have a closed tab. It's like, oh, can I get you anything else? No, I'm all set. And they freaking hang out to watch the show get over.
There you go, man. There you go. Because
Charlie's Angels, man, I really hope this whole no bra thing comes back around.
Oh, big time. And that was one of the key things about Charlie's Angels is they always had to run a little bit in the last 10 minutes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
They knew that the story wasn't that great, and they were losing us. Oh, jeez, we got to get the nipples in. And you know, another fact, I forget his name, but the guy who plays the most interesting man in the world.
Oh, that guy, yeah. Yeah.
He was actually in Charlie's Angels episode, because I looked him up, because I'm like, this guy really is cool.
Yeah, he is cool.
I find out that he did a bunch of television acting.
Yeah, see, everybody knows he was
making, like, when he got out of acting, made like a couple million dollars in like self-serve car washes in Southern California.
Whoa.
But he was in an episode of Charlie's Angels, and there's still photos of him. And I freaking remember the episode. It was like this, the Angels are at like this, either Vegas or tropical resort.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to, and he plays this criminal dude that like seduces one of them.
Oh.
Oh my God. But he looks so much cooler now.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. He looks so much cooler as an older guy. I've seen the pictures of him as a red shirt in Star Trek, and you know, that was the only thing that I knew about. You know, but dude, that is cool, man.
John Scalzi, a great author.
Yeah.
John Scalzi's got a new book out called Red Shirt.
Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. I got to check that out. Well, this is great, man. This totally takes a little bit of the pressure off me, the intensity that I feel having to look up so many of these dumb stories, man. And yet I know seething in your heart is more information about, oh, yeah, because we brought up something that you saw with some of our favorite workers. In addition to the great intellect of the converts to the Irish heritage today, Aaron Gobrak, you've got the other highly intelligent people in the wonderful union that we all love.
Yeah, well, I'm going down Elm Street in Manchester, and people know Manchester know, like on Friday and Saturday nights and drinking holidays, the place is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I just get past all these idiots that are out like, forget it. So anyway, I get up in front of the town hall, and there's a bunch of like postal workers out there with signs. I think the slogan was like USA for 6 day. Don't shut down the post office.
Oh.
I know, dude. And I'm like, really? So, you know, and I'm at a stoplight, and I roll down the window. And at this point, I'm like, all right, I got to do this.
Yeah.
Roll down the window, and I go, hey, you guys ever hear of Lysander Spooner?
Yeah.
Just blank looks all around. So the light turns green. I'm like, look them up, you morons. It's all back, because you know what? I don't know. Like, messing with postal employees or, like, you know, union employees, it's like kicking a puppy.
Yeah, but they're not as cute.
Yeah, but they're, like, completely unprepared for a rational argument, you know?
I know. And you know, it's really a shame. Like I've often said, I always think that people are blessed with a modicum of intelligence, you know?
Yeah.
And I just get so disappointed. It's not that, like, you know that a lot of those people, they can, you know, in certain facets of their life, they work angles and they probably, you know, do certain things that are very inventive and creative or whatever. But so many people, especially in unions, just the laziness just takes over.
Yeah, and, well, you know, I was a Teamster for years. And let me say, some of the unions, you know, I don't know, I think they started for good reason.
Yeah.
I mean, at their heart, they were set up to protect workers during, you know, some, I don't know if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure there's somebody
else. Well, I think there's some ideas that they do that, and I have no problem, or that they tried to do that, but I have no problem with people voluntarily forming a union as long as, the owner is not forced to have to keep them on. If he wants to hire other people, let him do so.
I worked at a, I don't know if I can say what it was, but it was a very major package delivery company.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I didn't go out and wear the brown uniform. I loaded trucks.
Yeah.
Loaded and unloaded trucks. And number one, they do well in spite of themselves. but you know, you were non-union employees I'm sorry. I was in a union, so of course, as soon as you start there, I'm part-time. My first three checks, you know, I made like $10. Because they have to go to union dues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, in union, it's another instance of the majority ruling, regardless of what, you know, the majority makes all the decisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at some point, 49% of the people in that union get deprived of what they want.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting is, not every business, this is a great example, the vast majority of small businesses fail, right? So,
yeah.
So that indicates that the people who are starting those businesses, they chose wrong, bad circumstances, whatever it was, they were incapable of being successful in that instance. But they might be successful elsewhere. Who knows? They might be successful starting up another business or as an employee or getting more training or something like that. So the vast majority of the people in the union could not run the business
better than the person who started the business. They don't know what's going on. And, you know, this whole idea of, well, they're the guys who with the hands-on experience and so on. If you're strong-arming somebody and they can't fire you, don't tell me that you're the only ones who know the business, because that's not all of it. You're the only ones the guy can have unless he breaks the law. So there's a lot of give and take. I know a lot of people on the ground do know the job really well and they can do great, but those unions tend to drag people down to the lowest common denominator.
Well, the thing is, the most vocal people in the union were the drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's all the loaders and unloaders that are doing the lion's share of the work.
Right.
You know, for every guy that's delivering packages, there's probably 10 dudes that are being buried in boxes, you know, in like 100-degree heat in these things in the summer. But the greatest example of union incompetence is during Christmas, we would just get beat up, you know, and the supervisors, your supervisors were all non-union.
Mm.
But what would happen, you would have guys, you know, that they weren't scheduled to work. They'd be walking around in their Browns, they weren't working, or they were on a break, and they'd just go walking around the building, because when these trucks got backed up, when you're loading them, you know, they get backed up, packages would be up the chute like 20, 30, 40, 50 feet sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and it literally, it's like a 9-foot-wide conveyor belt. It literally is just this wall of boxes coming at you.
Wow.
So, and they would, and supervisors, they come in to help you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You get, and they would, as soon as they freaking saw that, they'd file a grievance, and they get 8 hours of pay at their, like, $35 an hour, because a non-union employee was doing a union job.
Oh.
You should have been called in to do.
Oh. So, yeah, and that's just
ridiculous.
It's such a perfect example of these, you know, once these rules are there, you can't get rid of them, and then they take advantage of things. And then the people who are hard workers resent the fact that they'll be working hard and you know, they'll get penalized or something like that because they're not in the union. It's just ridiculous. It's out of control.
You speak up about it, and all of a sudden you're a dissenter. And I was that big strike in the late 90s.
Yeah, I remember that.
When I left this company. And I, you know, and they tell you, you know, okay, the union guy, I don't even want to say what union it is.
Yeah.
But they would come up and they'd say, all right, you walk out, pick a line for 4 hours, you get like $60, I think it was.
They are.
But they had people come up from the union hall in Boston to harass people that were crossing the picket line. Like these supervisors throwing hot coffee on their cars, or they'd have a coffee cup filled with like acetone or something.
Oh,
throwing
man.
Out the freaking car. You know, junk like that.
Wow. Yeah, that is really, well, look, you know, unions in most cases in many states are branches of, they're, you know, they exist because of government coercion, government strong-arming. So it makes sense that they would eventually start really strong-arming people on their end and then feeling no compunction about it. It's that kind of mentality where they don't have to compete. They can do nasty things, and they have no fear. You know, it's that mentality too. I hate that sort of bulldog mentality. The sort of, narrow-eyed, pig-faced dudes who just say, "Yeah, I'm not going to bother to think. I'll just push you around." I hate that sort of thing.
Dude, you know the story with me. I got big and worked out and learned how to protect myself simply because I was bullied so much as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
See, that's something. That's, you know, bullying. I don't know. I think it's one of the most unforgivable crimes because you're taking something from somebody you could never give back to them.
I agree with you.
So there's kids that, like, you know, that get bullied that, you know, they don't recover from that crap, you know, and they bring that with them for the rest of their lives.
No, man.
Thank God I got past it, you know.
Yeah, and you know,
because I had freaking punk music. I would go home and...
Yeah, no, yeah, I agree with you, and you get to vent your frustrations in other ways, and some kids, they can't. Some kids, they turn it inwards, they get self-destructive, or in some cases, some kids get violent. That band Vintage Trouble that my friend Luther and I went to go see last week down in Boston, dude, one of the neat things about that is they did this one song all about, and as they introduced it, the lead singer said, "Hey, you know, I don't want to get too preachy or whatever, but you know, we wrote this song on the bus one time, and we were thinking about certain people who just they never get told somebody loves them, and the song is called Nobody Told Me, and you know, and he said,
you know, just think about in this world, just how many fewer bad things, you know, so maybe if somebody had heard that right before they were going to do something bad to themselves or something bad to somebody else, maybe it would have changed them a little bit. Yeah. Maybe it would have stopped them, you know, and they sang the song, and you think about that and about how, you know, there are people out there who are just brutes, and that's what gets me. And the in a competitive marketplace, those brutes fail.
We call those people.
Yeah, yeah.
Police officers.
Yeah, well, that's all part right. of the problem. They have no legal competition. You know, they can take your money. They can do whatever they want. Anywhere that the government runs its monopoly and it can do anything it wants to, the brutes can come to the fore. And especially if they're the ones who are policing themselves, for God's sake, you know.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. But
I'm sorry to digress here, but you mentioned brutes.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of you listeners have seen it, but I actually watched the documentary that goes along with The Princess Bride about the making of it.
Oh, man.
Half hour long. It's freaking fantastic. Because if you didn't think the Andre the Giant was the most lovable dude, you got to watch this. It's amazing. And it's very touching to see, you know, him on the set. And he just talks about how he loves it on the set because nobody stares at him, you know.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I remember Billy Crystal used to talk about how he was just the most warm-hearted, kind person.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he said his heart was bigger than he was, you know.
And there's two documentaries on the new the Blu-ray release of it.
Mm.
And one of them's the first one. I think it's called As You Wish, The Making of Princess Bride. And there's a second one. And it's amazing. Like Mandy Patinkin, you want to hug the dude because he gets in tears talking about being in that movie.
Oh, that's cool. I like Mandy Patinkin. He's really
he tells a story about going to the screening, and halfway through it, he just bursts into tears. You know, and his wife's like, you know, what's wrong? What's wrong? And he goes, you don't understand. As an actor, I never thought I would get to be in a movie like this.
Oh wow!
So few. Yeah, and you know, like that movie. You know, that thing's gonna be 100 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, people whose parents showed them, you know.
Right. It'll be classic, like Deep Throat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, or My Name is Nobody.
It'll live on, man. It'll live on. No, I agree with you 100%.
And you know, when he made that, Rob Reiner had only made two movies in his life. He did Spinal Tap and The Sure Thing.
Oh, he did The Sure Thing. I forgot about that.
Yeah, who was in that?
Can't remember.
It'll come to me. He was in High Fidelity.
Oh, John Cusack?
John Cusack and Daphne Zuniga. Remember when she was a sex symbol?
Jeez, man. I don't remember all these sex symbols that much. You have a much better memory for these things, man. I don't know.
No, I was a horny kid.
Well, I guess I'm get distracted by all the ladies nowadays. Get it, ladies?
Yeah.
So, all right. Now, talk about ladies. There was a woman who was very unladylike that we played a little bit earlier in the program. And I'd love to get your opinion on the great Senator Dianne Feinstein, who doesn't want to be lectured about the Second Amendment, even though she would not answer Senator Cruz's question about selectively allowing the Second Amendment to be used in some cases and not to be used in other cases.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think of
it? Anytime like someone like that is approached with a valid question, you know, a pointed question, it always turns into this, like, you know, they'll go off on some tangent and just, like, completely redirect. It was just disgusting.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like if you ask somebody about a band. Like, yeah, so what do you think of 21st Century Schizoid Man by King Crimson? Don't talk to me about King Crimson. I listen to music.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would just basically be like, you know, listen, you did not answer the question. I asked you a question, a pointed question, and it's not like some, you know, it requires an answer. You didn't answer the question.
Yeah.
So what they say to her is just, why don't you just shut the
I know.
Taco Bell inside. It's significant seepage and information. You. I wish your head would catch fire and I could put it out with a shovel.
Put it out with a shovel. That's awesome.
Oh, man. All right, so I'll get my 20 megahertz sounds ready, and I will thank you now, my friend. This is very good. We go a couple segments for this. This is awesome, man.
You know, another union thing I could tell you about.
Yeah.
When I was in the band with Chris.
Yeah.
Like, he got his schedule stretched where he would have to work Friday nights, and we practice Friday nights. No. I was like, dude, well, you want to change practice? Oh, no, I got it. And he literally would, he was a shop steward.
Yeah.
Go in, sign in, do a couple things, come home, and just drink and practice with us till like midnight, and then go back to work to clock out.
Oh, my God.
And he works for the fucking Postal Service.
Oh, yeah, no shit. Oh, dude. I'll get some more 20 megahertz tones there. Dude, this is awesome. You're beautiful. You're beautiful, baby. I love it. I love it.
You know, I feel better talking with you like this.
Yeah.
What if we were live?
I know. Well, you know, it's funny because it's just, it's a natural thing. And, you know, I mean, there's a little bit of pressure as I get ready for the show and I'm trying to get the stories together. You know how it is. And it's always depressing because it's like watching, you know, watching a person being in a bad relationship getting beaten every day, and you're like, get out of it. You don't understand. They're like, where are the welts and bruises coming from? The government. Get out.
That would be a good, like, fake commercial.
Yeah.
Erica, what happened? Well, I fell down the stairs. You know, and then, okay, next day. You know, next week, like, America, hey, what's up with a bruise on your eye? Oh, I walked into a door. And then go into like a battered nation shelter.
That is brilliant.
Like, and you could have like testimonials. Hello, I am Uganda. I spent time at the battered nation shelter, and now I'm.
And people say, some people would be like, oh, you're making light of people who are getting battered. It's like, no, we're making a point about a different kind of. Exactly. We're trying to show people how bad it is right now. All right, man, we got to fly, but this has been great. This is awesome. Muchos gracias and all that stuff from me, LG Grande, to you, Los Malcomos. All right?
Okay.
All right,
thanks for having me on.
All right, now you're going to have to come on sometime as Manuel from Faulty Towers and go, I know nothing.
No problem.
All right, man, I'll talk to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.